Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, looking Michael P. McCarthy eye to eye here
right
in the studios in Maryland. Tell the comptroller to list that down as one of my visits.
That was my joke. You stole it.
I stole it, Mikey. Tell him to write it down. It'll be 4 business days in Maryland. So they can write that down. I will make sure that I report it. So
and I'm going to sit over here and start calculating how much this trip cost you.
I'll make sure my salary is reported to Maryland for those 4 days that I was here and working. And but anyway, we're here on an open show. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, remember that any question you have is probably somebody else wants to hear the answer to. Whether it's on estate planning, income taxes, insurances, we were talking about that last week, that, you know, not enough people call us in and ask questions about insurance, but, you know, we probably spend more time fixing insurances for clients as compared to, I mean, we do a lot, you know, fixing income tax returns and doing some tax planning and estate planning and things of that sort. But it's amazing how often we have to fix auto and home insurance, how often we have to fix life insurance, how often we discuss the implications of long-term care and so forth. Because, you know, just not enough time is spent doing risk management as opposed to just getting people insurance policies. And there's a big difference between professional risk management and getting somebody an insurance policy.
And even risk management beyond insurance policies, but titling of assets and
titling of assets. I'm doing a webinar on that in about a week or two at the company. It's called Asset Protection and Titling of Assets for Divorce or Liability or for Bankruptcy, et cetera, et cetera. And so if somebody wants to see that, they can just go onto our website and they'll see that it's going to come up. Actually, I'll tape it and then they're just going to rebroadcast it, right? So anyway, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. This morning, Mikey, I was talking to Sean Casey about the Inflation Reduction Act. And politicians, I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, they just irritate me that they come up with this kind of manipulative garbage. There is nothing in the current the current bill that they passed has anything to do with inflation reduction. But, you know, because inflation is such a bad thing for them right now, they called this bill the Inflation Reduction Act so that they could, you know, say if inflation comes down, see, look, we passed this incredible law that brought inflation down. Well, you know, it has nothing to do with inflation. Everybody knows it.
But they timed it right based on recent CPI reports.
Before we even passed it, inflation got so concerned it came down because we were ready to pass the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, but when you raise taxes on corporations, what are corporations going to do? They're going to raise their prices to implement the taxes they have to pay, right?
Yeah.
When you give an electric vehicle company the knowledge that their buyers of their cars are going to get a $5,000 or $7,000 tax credit, are they going to drop the price of their car because somebody just got an EV tax credit on it? No, they're going to raise the price of their car and going to say, gee, due to the rate of inflation, we had to raise our price another $2,000 or $3,000. And by the way, you're getting the tax credit, so don't worry.
Yep.
I don't know how they go to bed at night and believe in themselves when they wake up the next morning, you know?
Well, yeah, and a lot of stuff has a different intention than what they say the intention is. Like the car credit, the intention there is to drive production. They want to drive demand so that, you know, the auto vehicles produce more production.
No, well, that's what they say, but that doesn't...
No, that's not what they say. They say they want to reduce inflation.
Hold on, let's see what Jeff in Cadenceville. Jeff, I'm not sure we're going to get all your thing in, but let's start with it. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you very much for taking my phone call. I had a quick question regarding, as parents, we have some children, and we have them as our beneficiaries. And my question is, when we pass and the kids inherit the house, and if they want to sell the house, is it the difference between this, like, is that a stepped-up basis where it's fair market value when we pass, and then when they sell the house, it's the difference between the two, basically?
Okay, so how old are your children?
They're in their 30s.
30s, okay. So I'll tell you what. Now, will you hold on, and I'll come right back to you and answer this question, because there are a lot of good things that you're asking here, and I think a lot of our listeners would love to hear this. So if you want to hold on, we're going to come back to you right after this pause, and I'll be right back with Jeff and answer his question. If you want to get online, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question: yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, I got Jeff holding, so I'm going to go to Jeff, but I want to let you know we're on an open show. We got all our lines open other than Jeff, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, 410-922-6680. Plenty of lines open. We're going to Jeff. So, Jeff, let me go back and rephrase your question. So, if you and your spouse pass away and you leave your house to your children,
right,
the question is, will your children have to pay taxes on the sale of that house, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's say you bought a house for $100,000 and it's now worth $500,000. And you and your wife live in it until the day that the second of the two of you pass away and you leave it to the children. What happens is the children get a step up in cost basis, which means that whatever the fair market value of that house is, that's what the children's cost basis will be in that house. So they would inherit it with a cost basis of $500,000. If they turned around and sold it a week later, a month later, they would pay no capital gains tax on it. Now, let's say they held it for 6 months or 8 months, and at the time they valued the house at $500,000, but then the house went up to $550,000 and they sold it, they would have a $50,000 gain. But let's say that the house was worth $500,000 and 6 months later they sold it and they only got $450,000 for it because the market had deflated some. They would actually get a $50,000 tax loss that they could report on their tax return because the house actually deflated from the step up in basis of $500,000 at the time they passed away. And so that's the way it works with an inherited house.
So let's just say that like you said, let's say that you sell the house. It's worth $500,000 at the time of the passing, and let's say they sold it for $600,000. they're paying, that would be, that wouldn't be ordinary income. It would be a capital gains.
It would be a capital gain.
Whatever their rate is.
It taxed at their capital gain rate. So let's say one child makes $800,000, the other child makes $80,000. The child making $80,000 may pay zero capital gains tax on it. The child making $800,000 might pay 23.8% on it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So now what's the interesting part of your question is how do you determine what the value is at the time of death? And that's a complicated answer because it depends on if you get a full appraisal. That's a very good way of proving what it is. But it really comes down to, did you file an estate tax return? Did you have a probate estate? Did you take the house through probate administration, and did you value the house in the probate administration? Did you value it on an estate tax return? But what happens if you didn't do any of that? What's happened if the parents put you on what's called a life estate deed and you didn't actually?
That's what this is. That's what the thesis is that this is a life estate deed.
Yeah, so there's a good possibility your children won't have to do probate, and if your estate's not worth a lot of money, they might not have to do an estate tax return. Now it's up to them to prove to the IRS that they have a full understanding of what their step-up in cost basis is, because they didn't prove it in probate, and they didn't claim it in a state tax return. So they better be prepared to come up with a value. I'd probably recommend children in that situation to do an appraisal of the house.
Full appraisal.
Just to have it so that if anybody did question them, they had something to prove why they chose what they chose. All right,
gotcha.
Great question.
Now, I don't know if you want to answer, if you have time for one more question on somewhat of a different matter. If you don't, then I'll call back next week. But if you do, I'll be happy to ask it.
I do have Tom online, so I have to go to him. So why don't you call back next week? Love to talk to you again.
I will do that. Thank you so much for your time and for your guidance.
All right, Jeff. Take care. Good question. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, we've got lines open. We're going to Tom in Mount Washington. Tom, how can we help you?
I got a nephew. He's like 23.
I have two of them.
Hopefully they're good kids.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's, he's a good kid. He just graduated from college, and he had like a little side job for his last 3 years in college. He was just like teaching high school, junior high kids, like computer stuff, you know.
Okay.
He wasn't like a huge formal business or anything. He told me he made about $5,000-$7,000 a year, something like that. And it was, he said he never filed tax returns. And I understand he's below a limit where he would owe anything. So in that sense, he's okay. But
well, that's not true. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, great.
Well, did he get paid as an employee, or did he get paid?
No, it was his own thing. You know, he just
if he was getting the money directly, then he owes what's called Social Security and Medicare tax, even though he would not owe income taxes. He would owe 15.3% of Social Security and Medicare tax on that $5,000. So don't say his name out loud.
Nah. That's like 15. That's total the two of them, the Medicare and the
yep, 15.3%. Yes.
Okay. So that he has to like look at. The other thing he was asking me, I didn't know what to say. He said he didn't file any tax returns, so he couldn't, you know, get any of that stimulus package stuff, right? From, you know,
well, COVID. He could have filed a tax.
Can he go back and file?
Yes, he can still file, but if he does, he's going to have to pay 15.3% on anything that he made as a self-employed person. So calculate it out, 15.3, that's $750. He'd get a $1,400 stimulus check for 2021, you know, so he'd still net about $700 or $800 net out of that.
Now, 2020, he also, you know, did the
he would get about $1,800, and so if he had the same type of Social Security and Medicare tax, he would owe about $750 again. So he would still net $1,100 in that one. So all in all, he'd walk away with about $1,800 if he didn't get any. Now his parents could have gotten a stimulus check for him if he was a dependent on their return.
Good point. I'll have to make sure they you know, that they clear, make sure that that's all cleared up. I don't think they took him because he was, you know, like 23 and living on his own at that point.
Okay. So,
and I guess that there would also be maybe he might get, what do you call it, you know, credit quarters for quarters towards.
Yes, he would definitely get quarters. He would get credit. He would get four quarters of credit for each of those years if he made more than $5,000. So there's some benefits to it. If he's got the stimulus credits that he can get, and if he was in college and somebody was paying tuition, he may even get a American Opportunity credit of another $1,000. So there's a good bit of money he could be leaving on the table if he doesn't file.
Wow. Okay.
And now, you know, what I would be surprised is that nobody filed a 1099 NEC on him if he was working for school systems or something like that.
It was a private thing. I know. That. He was, you know, like parents would just agree, pay him like $50 an hour to tutor their kids.
Yeah, there would be no 1099 requirement on that. So you're right. but anyway, it's interesting. Okay. Interesting situation for him.
Okay, so he should... Really, he should file. Do it. Yeah.
I see no reason not to. And keep in mind that even if he made $5,000, he may be able to come up with $1,000 or $2,000 of deductions that he could take, and he wouldn't even owe that much in Social Security and Medicare tax.
Laptop, internet,
driving to and from, working with the kids, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he thought he's being, you know, real industrious, you know, doing some work, not sitting on his ass, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, trust me, the self-employed tax laws are not very logical, in my opinion. So, anyway, good point, sir.
Anything you want to say about that is great. So, thank you, sir.
You take care, Tom. Good question. This is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Nobody's on the lines. I'd love to talk to you when we come back from this pause. 410-922-6680.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And, Mikey, it must be me here in Maryland. There's nobody wants to talk to us. You know, I should go back to Florida so that they'll call in and talk to you. And then you can pass them on to me, you know?
Well, you're just not as engaging when you answer the phone calls. You're scaring them off.
Not nearly as engaging. And so, anyway, we got the lines totally open, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. And we're on an open show. Anything goes. So, you know, what do you want to talk about, Mike?
Well, let's see. I think there was some parts of insurance that we didn't get to last week. Well, here's the one. So one of the things that I think people miss a lot is they get their homeowner's policy and they know kind of what the big numbers are and they think, okay, that's great. But one of the things that certain people that collect items need to be careful attention to is where the internal limits might be on a specific area. So fine art, firearms,
jewelry,
these things tend to have $2,500 limits, maybe a $5,000 limit if you're lucky.
Erie does $10,000 on a lot of them, so that's one of the reasons why we like Erie. But you're right, they have limit. So if you have more than that...
So what do they need to get? What do they need to ask the agent for?
Well, they don't have to, but if they want to make sure they get reimbursed for all of it, they'd have to have a special article writer or a special policy for your personal property.
Yeah, so one way to handle it is a rider for personal property. Another way to handle it is certain insurance companies will have different tiers of their coverage. So it's the same insurance company. The underlying coverage of 500 a million or whatever it is you have is still the same. But they have kind of you, Mr. and Mrs. Client, you're in this premier area, so we'll get you the premier policy. And instead of having to pay for those riders, you're getting increased limits through that.
Yeah. So there's lots of ways to do it. And the question is, do you have enough that you should worry about it? You know,
right.
Because you get a client that's got $8,000 in jewelry and the limit's $2,500, and they're putting a rider on for $5,000 more of jewelry.
Well, we had a client one time, and I toured his home, and he took me downstairs and he opened a big safe door and I was in a whole room full of firearms and they were pretty and shiny and I bet you worth more than $5,000.
Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. We do have a caller online. I'm actually putting my glasses on so I can see what his name is. We're going to go to Frank in Bel Air. Frank, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I actually am a client of yours, and wanted to say that Graham does a great job handling our account.
Well, we appreciate you saying that.
I just wanted to ask, since I trust what you say, and I kind of turned it on late and heard the lead into this, I wanted to ask you, are we in a recession or not?
Well, the answer to the question is technically no, because until that Bureau of whatever comes out and says we're in a recession, nobody knows whether you're in a recession or not. They use different parameters, whether it's quarters is one thing that they're going to consider, but they're also going to consider whether jobs are being lost and the unemployment rate is rising and whether the manufacturer's report is above or below 50 and manufacturing is increasing or decreasing. So there's all kinds of different things that they're going to use. But the technical definition of a recession is this group of economists say it. And if they don't, then we're not. And if they do, we are. And nobody gets to tell them what is a recession. They get to tell us. Don't ask me why. That's just the way it works.
And it's in a past sense as well. It's not to say that you're in it now. It's like, oh, we've been in it for the past 6 months.
Yes, they do. That when they say it, a lot of times they say, oh, yeah, and by the way, it started in February of 2022, and they tell us in October, you know. So I have no idea. Right now, personally, if somebody asked me, are we in a recession, I would say no. Because employment is still strong, manufacturers are still strong, you know, things of that sort. Even though we had two quarters of negative growth, I would say no right now. But I'm not part of their committee. Does that help?
Great. Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. Keep up the good work. And like I said, I appreciate your help.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thank you. Anyway, we're on an open show, Michael, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call and ask a question. But, that, you know, you brought up a good one there with the homeowners and some of the things that people don't realize. But, you know, here's probably one of the biggest ones, Mike, and that is life insurance.
Yep.
You know, when you're doing risk management for life insurance, the whole concept is if something happens to that person, they pass away, or one of the parents, let's say, the husband or the wife passes away, what kind of income did they have? Who was dependent on that income? What kind of things would they leave behind that they would still want to see the other spouse? And you might have two people, identical situation, same type of income for both spouses, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer to one might be they need $2 or $3 million of life insurance. The answer to the other one may mean they don't need any life insurance. Why? Yeah. Because each one has different goals and objectives. What are your goals and objectives? What's this spouse do? What does that spouse do? How much do you need on this spouse? How much do you need on that spouse? How about this family? How about that family? Yeah. Everybody's different. There is no perfect answer.
And every insurance policy is different, too. There are so many types of insurance policies, and each one has different features to it. And that's one of the things that people really need to understand when they're buying insurance is not only how does this policy work if I die today, how does this policy work if I die 20 years from now?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you have to understand the dynamics of that policy. And if you're sitting there trusting the person that's getting the commission on the policy, there's no assurance that they are doing risk management. They might be, but I wouldn't count on it.
Well, and for that point, any one individual may have a different place where they should even get that insurance. You know, you and I are very lucky. We're CPAs, which means that the insurance industry has determined we're a very low risk.
Right.
So we get ours, you know, when we
can get it through an association policy that's pretty darn cheap and we control it, you know, and so forth. So anyway, we got a caller online, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, 410-922-6680. We're going to Mike in Sykesville. Mike, how can we help you?
Yeah, hi. I have a question on charitable contributions.
Okay.
I regularly give a high percentage of my AGI, adjusted gross income,
okay,
to charity,
okay,
on a regular basis every year. But I'm considering doing, in addition to that, doing a QCD up to that limit.
Okay, so you're...
I run into problems.
You're over 70 and a half then, right?
Correct.
Okay. So do you know what the QCD limit is?
100.
Yes, it's 100 per person too, right? If you're married,
that's right.
You can both do 100.
Exactly.
So you have the right to do that. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great thing to do as a charitably inclined person.
And also, just to throw it in, if you wanted to gift your children or something, you have limits of the 15,000, 20,000 or whatever.
Not really. I just wrote an article about this not too long ago, that the biggest misnomer of gifting to children is that you can only give them 15,000. That's not true. It has nothing to do with income taxes. It has everything to do with the estate and gift tax laws. And unless you understand the estate and gift tax laws, you will never understand the $15,000 gift limitation. So the way it works, Mike, is you can only give away $12 million currently in your lifetime and at death cumulatively to anybody other than your spouse. So if you know, the government says in their infinite wisdom, we'll allow you to give $15,000 a year per person per year without beginning to reduce your $12 million lifetime limitation. Okay? So if you don't have more than $12 million, you never really have to be too concerned about that $15,000 limitation. Now, keep in mind that $12 million is going back down to $6.5 million, let's call it, in 2026. So if your estate's not worth more than $6 million, you don't have a lot to worry about whether you're giving your kids $15,000 a year or more. So it has nothing to do with income tax. I would encourage you to go to our website and look up the Knowledge Center and look for articles. And I just put an article in there about this exact issue, the 15,000 limitation. So,
and that is the Knowledge, what?
Financialconsulate.com, and then at the top of the screen you'll see Knowledge Center, and you just click on that.
Yeah, and then you go to articles, or what do they call it, the Consulate Journal, right?
Consulate Journal.
Consulate Journal is where you'll find that, all right?
Very good.
All right, Mike. Good question. Great. And we got to take a pause, but Carol, you're up next when we come back. So hold on there for us. You want to get online, 410-922-6680.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we've got Carol, and we're going to go to her in 1 second, but we just want to let you know, we probably have time for at least one or two other callers, 410-922-6680, if you don't want me to just ramble with Mikey after we talk to Carol. So
we've got plenty to talk about.
410-922-6680 if you want to call in. Carol in Westminster, how can we help you?
Yes, I always enjoy your ramblings. your first caller tonight asked questions about leaving a home, their home, to children.
Okay.
And I have a question. I don't have children or nieces or nephews or any blood relatives, but I have special people in my life that I'll be leaving my home to. How do the tax laws affect them? I mean, do they
Well, you get the same thing in the sense of the step up in basis, okay? So from a capital gain and an income tax point of view, they're going to have the exact same situation as what we talked about with that gentleman earlier. Okay, so you have a house you paid $100,000 for, it's worth $1 million, let's say, okay? And you leave it to just a really good friend. They're going to inherit that house for $1 million. They're going to get a step up in basis to $1 million, and they're going to pay no taxes on it unless the house appreciates from $1 million until they sell it, okay?
Okay.
Now,
okay.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
The bad news.
Yeah.
Is that you live in Maryland.
Right.
And believe it or not, if I'm not mistaken, there's only like 3 states left in the country that hit you with an inheritance tax. There's only 1 state in the country that has both an inheritance tax and an estate tax. And guess what state that is?
I bet it's Maryland.
I'll bet you you're right, too. So here's the deal. No, I don't think so. You got to read those laws of each of the. Mike's raising his hand over there saying there are 5 states, and he's right. There were 5 states, but I believe 2 of them have eliminated their inheritance tax after a certain year in the last 3 or 4 years. And so you're really down to like 3 that would hit them with an inheritance tax. And some of them don't count. Anyway, so here's the point. 10% of whatever that house is worth or any of the assets you leave to a non-parent, child, brother, or sister is going to pay 10% inheritance tax on that asset. So if you leave a $500,000 house to them, they're going to have to pay $50,000 in inheritance tax to the state of Maryland, even though they get the whole asset 100% tax-free for income tax purposes.
Oh, my God.
Now, you know, I mean, you listen, you say to the Maryland legislature, what are you thinking about? What's the purpose for inheritance taxes? Hasn't Carol paid enough money in her lifetime that you have to hit? And why her friends? Why her friends? She was never married. She didn't have children. So why didn't she get to leave it to her friends tax free also? Yeah. And you know, and this is the kind of garbage that politicians do that make you so irritated with the way they think about things, you know?
All right, well, we have an upcoming election, so hopefully we can change some of that.
That's true. All right, Carol, good question.
Thank you very much.
I got another caller, but go ahead, Mikey, real quick.
So if NerdWallet is correct, and we've generally seen good articles from them, there's currently 6 states that if you die today have an inheritance tax, and Iowa, being one of them, has repealed it after 2025, the others being Kentucky, Maryland, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania.
New Jersey's is repealed.
Well, NerdWallet didn't know that.
Well, I know New Jersey's is repealed, so look into it. Mike in Baltimore. Not Mike in my station here with me in Baltimore, but Mike in Baltimore. How can we help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think you might have talked a couple of weeks ago about which states. So I'm a retiree on a fixed income, and I'm just wondering, is West Virginia? I'm thinking about moving to West Virginia, but I've been told. Might have been on your share that maybe Delaware is better in Tennessee. What about West Virginia?
Well, it depends on what your income is, Mike. So here's what you have to think about. From an income tax point of view, if your total income is less than, let's say, $50,000 or $70,000, and most of it is made up of Social Security or maybe even a pension in Social Security, Maryland, from an income tax point of view, is not a horrible state to live in. Okay. Because, you know, with their new little tax law, you probably won't pay hardly anything in Maryland taxes if you have a relatively low income. But Maryland has fairly high property taxes. Maryland has a high sales tax. So you're going to probably pay little or nothing in Delaware anyway, but you'll have no property tax or very low property tax, and you'll have no sales tax. So Delaware will be a better state than West Virginia. And if you really wanted the the best of them all nearby would Tennessee would be one of the best you could have, because you would have absolutely no income tax, you'd have very low property tax, and you'd have relatively low sales tax too. But now, Delaware would be a great choice.
Would you say maybe nearby? The third choice may be West Virginia.
I think that West Virginia would be a relatively good answer. They're not bad in any of that stuff. What are you going to say, Mikey?
Well, the one thing that I think everybody should always pay attention to is the non-monetary aspects as well. So there's family, there's, you know, support networks. But the one thing that especially retirees in West Virginia don't always consider is access to health care, depending on their health levels.
Oh, well, you can always get to health care anytime you want it, you know?
No, it's a lot more available in some areas than others. And I think West Virginia is one of those areas that has less availability.
I don't disagree with you.
From a client currently dealing with that.
Yeah, you know, I understand that. So you have to think about those things too. But you know, West Virginia is not far from D.C. Certain parts of West Virginia.
Yeah.
And D.C. has a lot of good medical facilities nearby. So
as the ambulance drives there.
I hear what
and
you're
not
saying,
to the veterinary
Mikey.
Clinic.
You know. But, you know, you have to consider those things too, Mike. But from an income tax point of view, sales tax, property tax, you know, Delaware is a good one.
From the money standpoint.
Delaware is a good. But I've heard a lot of Delawareans are irritated because there isn't good access to health care down there.
Yep. They
so
complain too.
That's a problem. But, you know, I'd rather enjoy my money. And worry about
live.
The health care in the future. I don't know about that, Mike. You know, you can't tell me that it's going to work out perfect just because you have the money and you're nearby health care.
No,
you know?
No, I don't know.
As a matter of fact, the people in Delaware that I know have always come back up here to Maryland, and if they really felt they needed to, and they've got the health care they needed up here when they needed it. So anyway, does that answer your question, Mike?
Yeah, you guys do a magnificent job. I appreciate it, okay?
All right, you take care. Thank you. You know, don't be a cheerleader for Maryland.
I wasn't cheerleading Maryland.
There's nothing about Maryland that they ought to
West Virginia
cheer
a little bit.
Cheerleader.
Tennessee has a lot of great medical facilities, you know, depending on where you are, if you're in the right part of Tennessee.
Yeah, that's true. There are some great medical facilities in Tennessee, in certain parts of Tennessee.
Certain parts of Tennessee.
You're absolutely right there. Actually, down where I live, Mayo Clinic is 40 minutes from me.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, Florida doesn't have any problems with medical access.
Some parts of Florida have some problems with medical access. So, but, you know, that is a consideration that some people really consider. It's not high on my list, personally. Doesn't mean that I shouldn't have it high on my list, but it's not high on my list. Anyway, we're finished, actually, tonight. We only have 10 seconds left, Mike.
Yep.
You have anything to add?
Welcome to Maryland and goodbye from Maryland.
And also, go to our Financial Consulate website. Look at our Knowledge Center. You'll see that there's Consulate Journal articles. There's webinars.
Financial Pulse, our monthly video.
This, if you ever missed the radio show, you can always listen to it without commercials. Don't tell WCBM that, Anita. But if you want to listen to those, there's a lot of good things on there. We try to continue the education on our website. Anyway, Michael, always a delight to be with you.
Absolutely.
But I got to go back to Florida.
So I'll take you right back.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
What I'd like to do to you, shower the people you love with love. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better to feel.